Geekscape.com.
Famous Men of the Middle Ages, Part 2. Alaric the Visigoth, King from 394 to 410 AD. Long before the beginning of the period known as the Middle Ages, a tribe of barbarians called the Goths lived north of the River Danube in the country which is now known as Romania. It was then a part of the great Roman Empire, which at that time had two capitals, Constantinople, the new city of Constantine, and Rome. The Goths had come from the shores of the Baltic Sea and settled on this Roman territory, and the Romans had not driven them back. During the reign of the Roman Emperor, Valens, some of the Goths joined a conspiracy against him. Valens punished them for this by crossing the Danube and laying waste to their country. At last the Goths had to beg for mercy. The Gothic chief was afraid to set foot on Roman soil, so he and Valens met on their boats in the middle of the Danube and made a treaty of peace. For a long time, the Goths were at war with another tribe of barbarians called Huns. Sometimes the Huns defeated the Goths and drove them to their camps in the mountains. Sometimes the Goths came down to the plains again and defeated the Huns. At last, the Goths grew tired of such constant fighting and thought they would look for new settlements. They sent some of their leading men to the Emperor Valens to ask permission to settle in some country belonging to Rome. The messengers said to the Emperor, "If you will allow us to make homes in the country south of the Danube, we will be friends to Rome and fight for her when she needs our help." The Emperor at once granted this request. He said to the Gothic chiefs, "Rome always needs good soldiers. Your people may cross the Danube and settle on our land. As long as you remain true to Rome, we will protect you against your enemies." These Goths were known as Visigoths or Western Goths. Other tribes of Goths who had settled in southern Russia were called Ostrogoths or Eastern Goths. After getting permission from the Emperor Valens, a large number of the Visigoths crossed the Danube with their families and their cattle and settled in the country now called Bulgaria. In course of time, they became a very powerful nation, and in the year 394, they chose as their king one of their chiefs, named Alaric. He was a brave man and a great soldier, even when as a child he took delight in war, and at the age of 16 he fought as bravely as the older soldiers. One night, not long after he became king, Alaric had a very strange dream. He thought he was driving in a golden chariot through the streets of Rome amidst the shouts of the people who hailed him as an emperor. This dream made a deep impression on his mind. He was always thinking of it, and at last he began to have the idea that he could make the dream come true. "To be master of the Roman Empire," he said to himself, "that is indeed worth trying for, and why should I not try? With my brave soldiers, I can conquer Rome, and I shall make the attempt." So Alaric called his chiefs together and told them what he had made up his mind to do. The chiefs gave a cry of delight, for they approved of the king's proposal. In those days, fighting was almost the only business of chiefs, and they were always glad to be at war, especially when there was hope of getting rich spoils. And so the Visigoth chiefs rejoiced at the idea of war against Rome, for they knew that if they were victorious, they would have the wealth of the richest city of the world to divide among themselves. Soon, they got ready a great army. With Alaric in command, they marched through Thrace and Macedonia, and before long reached Athens. There were now no great warriors in Athens, and the city surrendered to Alaric. The Goths plundered the homes and the temples of the Athenians, and then marched to the state of Elis, in the southwestern part of Greece. Here, A famous Roman general named Stilicho besieged them in their camp. Alaric managed to force his way through the lines of the Romans and escaped. He marched to Epirus. This was a province of Greece that lay on the east side of the Ionian Sea. Arcadius, the emperor of the east, now made Alaric governor of this district and a large region lying near it. The whole territory was called Eastern Illyricum and formed a part of the Eastern Empire. Alaric now set out to make an attack on Rome, the capital of the Western Empire. As soon as Honorius, Emperor of the West, learned that Alaric was approaching, he fled to a strong fortress among the mountains of northern Italy. His great general Stilicho came to his rescue and defeated Alaric near Verona. But even after this, Honorius was so afraid of Alaric that he made him governor of a part of his empire called Western Illyricum and gave him a large yearly income. Honorius, however, did not keep certain of his promises to Alaric, who consequently, in the year 408, marched to Rome and besieged it. The cowardly emperor fled to Ravenna, leaving his general to make terms with Alaric. It was agreed upon that Alaric should withdraw from Rome upon the payment of 5,000 pounds of gold and 30,000 pounds of silver. When Honorius read the treaty, he refused to sign it. Alaric then demanded that the city be surrendered to him, and the people, terrified, opened their gates and even agreed that Alaric should appoint another emperor in place of Honorius. This new emperor, however, ruled so badly that Alaric thought it best to restore Honorius. Then Honorius, when just about to be treated so honorably, allowed a barbarian chief who was an ally of his to make an attack upon Alaric. The attack was unsuccessful, and Alaric immediately laid siege to Rome for the third time. The city was taken, and Alaric's dream came true. In a grand procession, he rode at the head of his army through the streets of the great capital. Then began the work of destruction. The Goths ran in crowds through the city, wrecked private houses and public buildings, and seized everything of value that they could find. Alaric gave orders that no injury should be done to the Christian churches, but other splendid buildings of the great city were stripped of the beautiful and costly articles that they contained, and all the gold and silver was carried away from the public treasury. In the midst of the pillage, Alaric dressed himself in splendid robes and sat upon the throne of the emperor with a golden crown upon his head. While Alaric was sitting on the throne, thousands of the Romans were compelled to kneel down upon the ground before him and shout out his name as conqueror and emperor. Then the theatres and circuses were opened, and Roman athletes and gladiators had to give performances for the amusement of the conquerors. After 6 days of pillage and pleasure, Alaric and his army marched through the gates, carrying with them the riches of Rome. Alaric died on his way to Sicily, which he had thought to conquer also. He felt his death coming and ordered his men to bury him in the bed of the river Bucento and to put into his grave the richest treasures that he had taken from Rome. This order was carried out. A large number of Roman slaves were set to work to dig a channel and turn the water of the Bucento into it. They made the grave in the bed of the river, put Alaric's body into it, and then closed it up. Then the river was turned back into its old channel. As soon as the grave was covered up and the water flowed over it, the slaves who had done the work were put to death by the Visigoth chiefs.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan.
Attila the Hun, king from 434 to 453 AD. The fierce and warlike tribe called the Huns, who had driven the Goths to seek new homes, came from Asia into southeastern Europe and took possession of a large territory lying north of the River Danube. During the first half of the 5th century, the Huns had a famous king named Attila. He was only 21 years old when he became their king, but although he was young, he was very brave and ambitious, and he wanted to be a great and powerful king. Not far from Attila's palace, there was a great rocky cave in the mountains. In this cave lived a strange man called the Hermit of the Rocks. No one knew his real name or from what country he had come. He was very old, with a wrinkled face and long grey hair and beard. Many people believed that he was a fortune teller, so people often went to him to inquire what was to happen to them. One day, shortly after he became king, Attila went to the cave to get his fortune told. "Wise man," said he, "look into the future and tell me what is before me in the path of life." The hermit thought for a few moments, and then said, "O king, I see you, a famous conqueror, the master of many nations. I see you going from country to country, defeating armies and destroying cities, until men call you the fear of the world. You heap up vast riches, but just after you have married the woman you love, grim death strikes you down." With a cry of horror, Attila fled from the cave. For a time, he thought of giving up his idea of becoming a great man, but he was young and full of spirit, and very soon he remembered only what had been said to him about his becoming a great and famous conqueror, and he began to prepare for war. He gathered together the best men from the various tribes of his people and trained them into a great army of good soldiers. About this time, one of the king's shepherds, while taking care of cattle in the fields, noticed blood dripping from the foot of one of the oxen. The shepherd followed the streak of blood through the grass, and at last he found the sharp point of a sword sticking up out of the earth. He dug out the weapon, carried it to the palace, and gave it to King Attila. The king declared it was the sword of Chu, the god of war. He then strapped it to his side and said that he would always wear it. "I shall never be defeated in battle," he cried, "as long as I fight with the sword of Chu." As soon as his army was ready, he marched with it into countries which belonged to Rome. He defeated the Romans in several great battles and captured many of their cities. The Roman Emperor Theodosius had to ask for terms of peace. Attila agreed that there should be peace, but soon afterwards he found out that Theodosius had formed a plot to murder him. He was so enraged at this that he began war. He plundered and burned cities wherever he went, and at last the emperor had to give him a large sum of money and a portion of country south of the Danube. This made peace, but the peace did not last long. In a few years, Attila appeared at the head of an army of 700,000 men. With this great force, he marched across Germany and into Gaul. He rode on a beautiful black horse and carried at his side the sword of Chu. He attacked and destroyed towns and killed the inhabitants without mercy. The people had such a dread of him that he was called the Scourge of God and the Fear of the World. Attila and his terrible Huns marched on through Gaul until they came to the city of Orleans. Here the people bravely resisted the invaders. They shut their gates and defended themselves in every way that they could. In those times, all towns of any great size were surrounded by strong walls. There was war constantly going on nearly everywhere, and there were a great many fierce tribes and chiefs who lived just by robbing their neighbours. So the towns and castles, in which there was much money or other valuable property, were not safe without high and strong walls. Attila tried to take Orleans, but soon after he began to attack the walls, he saw a great army at a distance coming towards the city. He quickly gathered his forces together, marched to the neighbouring plain of Champagne, and halted at the place where the city of Châlons now stands. The army which Attila saw was an army of 300,000 Romans and Visigoths. It was led by a Roman general named Aetius and the Visigoth king Theodoric. The Visigoths, after the death of Alaric, had settled in parts of Gaul, and their king had now agreed to join the Romans against the common enemy, the terrible Huns. So the great army of Romans and Visigoths marched up and attacked the Huns at Châlons. It was a fierce battle. Both sides fought with the greatest bravery. At first, the Huns seemed to be winning. They drove back the Romans and Visigoths from the field, and in the fight, Theodoric was killed. Aetius now began to fear that he would be beaten. But just at that moment, Thorismond, the son of Theodoric, made another charge against the Huns. He had taken command of the Visigoths when his father was killed, and now he led them on to the fight. They were all eager to have revenge for the death of their king, so they fought like lions and swept across the plain with great fury. The Huns were soon beaten on every side, and Attila himself fled to his camp. It was the first time he had ever been defeated. Thorismond, the conqueror, was lifted upon his shield on the battlefield and hailed as the king of the Visigoths. When Attila reached his camp, he had all his baggage and wagons gathered into a great heap. He intended to set fire to it and jump into the flames if the Romans should come there to attack him. "Here, I will perish in the flames," he cried, "rather than surrender to my enemies." But the Romans did not come to attack him, and in a few days he marched back to his own country. Very soon, however, he was again on the warpath. This time, he invaded Italy. He attacked and plundered the town of Aquileia, and the terrified inhabitants fled for their lives to the hills and the mountains. Some of them took refuge in the islands and marshes of the Adriatic Sea. Here they founded Venice. The people of Rome and the Emperor Valentinian were greatly alarmed at the approach of the dreaded Attila. He was now near the city, and they had no army strong enough to send against him. Rome would have been again destroyed if it had not been for Pope Leo I, who went to the camp of Attila and persuaded him not to attack the city. It is said that the barbarian king was awed by the majestic aspect and priestly robes of Leo. It is also told that the apostles Peter and Paul appeared to Attila in his camp and threatened him with death if he should attack Rome. He did not go away, however, without first getting a large sum of money as ransom. Shortly after leaving Italy, Attila suddenly died. Only the day before his death, he had married a beautiful woman whom he loved very much. The Huns mourned their king in a barbarous way. They shaved their heads and cut themselves on their faces with knives so that their blood, instead of their tears, flowed for the loss of their great leader. They enclosed his body in three coffins, one of gold, one of silver, and one of iron, and they buried him at night in a secret spot in the mountains. When the funeral was over, they killed the slaves who had dug the grave, just as the Visigoths had done after the burial of Alaric. After the death of Attila, we hear little more of the Huns.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.
Genseric the Vandal. king from 427 to 477 AD. The Vandals were another wild and fierce tribe that came from the shores of the Baltic and invaded central and southern Europe in the later times of the Roman Empire. In the 5th century, some of these people occupied a region in the south of Spain. One of their most celebrated kings was named Genseric. He became king in 427, when he was but 21 years of age. He was lame in one leg and looked as if he were a very ordinary person. Like most of the Vandals, he was a cruel and cunning man, but he had great ability in many ways. He fought in battles, even when a boy, and was known far and wide for his bravery and skill as a leader. About the time that Genseric became king, the governor of the Roman province in the north of Africa on the Mediterranean coast was a man called Count Bonifaci. This Count Bonifaci had been a good and loyal officer of Rome, but a plot was formed against him by Aetius, the general who had fought Attila at Chalons. The Roman emperor at the time of the plot was Valentinian III. He was, then, too young to act as ruler, so the affairs of government were managed by his mother, Placidia. Aetius advised Placidia to dismiss Bonifaci and call him home from Africa. He said the count was a traitor and that he was going to make war against Rome. At the same time, he wrote secretly to Count Bonifaci and told him that if he came to Rome, the empress would put him to death. Bonifaci believed this story, and he refused to return to Rome. He also sent a letter to Genseric, inviting him to come to Africa with an army. Genseric was greatly delighted to receive the invitation from Bonifaci. He had long wanted to attack Rome and take from her some of the rich countries she had conquered, and now a good opportunity had been offered. So he got ready a great army of his brave Vandals, and they sailed across the Straits of Gibraltar to Africa. They soon gained possession of that part of the African coast on which they had landed, and marched into other parts of the coast and captured towns and cities. By this time, Bonifaci had learned all about the wicked plot of Aetius. He now regretted having invited the Vandals to Africa and tried to induce them to return to Spain, but Genseric sternly refused. "Never," said he, "shall I go back to Spain until I am master of Africa." "Then," cried Bonifaci, "I will drive you back." Soon after, there was a battle between the Romans and the Vandals, and the Romans were defeated. They were also defeated in several other battles. At last, they had to flee for safety to two or three towns which the Vandals had not yet taken. One of these towns was Hippo. Genseric captured this town after a siege of 13 months. Then he burned the churches and other buildings and laid waste to the neighbouring country. This was what the Vandals did whenever they took a town, and so the word Vandal came to mean a person who needlessly or wantonly destroys valuable property. A great many of the natives of Africa joined the army of Genseric. They had for a long time been ill-treated by the Romans and were glad to see them defeated. Genseric continued his work of conquest until he took the city of Carthage, which he made the capital of his new kingdom in Africa. But he was not content with conquering merely on land. He built great fleets and sailed over the Mediterranean, capturing trading vessels. For many years he plundered the towns along the coasts, so that the name of Genseric became a terror to the people of all the countries bordering the Mediterranean. One day, a Roman ship came to Carthage with a messenger from the Empress Eudoxia to Genseric. Eudoxia was the widow of Valentinian III. After ruling for several years, Valentinian had just been murdered by a Roman noble named Maximus, who had at once made himself emperor. When the messenger entered the room where Genseric was, he said, "Great king, I bring you a message from the empress Eudoxia. She begs your help. She and her two beautiful daughters are in danger in Rome. She wishes you to protect them against Maximus. She invites you to come with an army to Rome and take the city. She and her friends will help you as much as they can." With a cry of joy, Genseric sprang to his feet and exclaimed, "Tell the empress that I accept her invitation. I shall set out for Rome immediately. I shall protect Eudoxia and her friends." Genseric then got ready a fleet and a great army, and sailed across the Mediterranean to the mouth of the Tiber. When the emperor Maximus heard that the Vandals were coming, he prepared to flee from the city, and he advised the Senate to do the same. The people were so angry at this that they put him to death and threw his body into the river. 3 days later, Genseric and his army were at the gates of Rome. There was no one to oppose them, and they marched in and took possession of the city. It was only 45 years since Alaric had been there and carried off all the valuable things he could find. But since then, Rome had become again grand and wealthy, so there was plenty for Genseric and his Vandals to carry away. They spent 14 days in the work of plunder. They sacked the temples and the public buildings and private houses and the emperor's palace, and they took off to their ships immense quantities of gold, silver, jewels and furniture, and they destroyed hundreds of beautiful and priceless works of art. The Vandal king also put to death a number of the Roman citizens and carried away many more as slaves. He took Eudoxia and her daughters with him to Carthage. One of the daughters was soon afterwards married to Genseric's eldest son, Hunneric. Some years after the capture of Rome by Genseric, there was a Roman emperor named Majorian. He was a good ruler and a brave man. The Vandals still continued to attack and plunder cities in Italy and other countries belonging to Rome, and Majorian resolved to punish them. So he got together a great army and built a fleet of 300 ships to carry his troops to Carthage. But he first marched his men across the Alps, through Gaul, and down to the seaport of Cartagena in Spain, where his fleet was stationed. He took this route because he expected to add to his forces as he went along. Before sailing with his army for Carthage, he wished very much to see with his own eyes what sort of people the Vandals were, and whether they really were so powerful at home as was generally believed. So he dyed his hair and disguised himself in other ways, and went to Carthage, pretending that he was a messenger or an ambassador from the Roman emperor coming to talk terms of peace. Genseric received him with respect and entertained him hospitably, not knowing that he was the emperor Majorian. Of course, peace was not made. The emperor left Carthage after having got as much information as he could. But Genseric did not wait for the Roman fleet to come to attack him in his capital. When he got word that it was in the Bay of Cartagena, he sailed there with a fleet of his own, and in a single day burned or sank nearly all the Roman ships. After this, the Vandals became more than ever before the terror of the Mediterranean and all the countries that border upon it. Every year, their ships went around the coasts from Asia Minor to Spain, attacking and plundering cities on their way and carrying off prisoners. All the efforts of the Romans failed to put a stop to these ravages. The Emperor Leo, who ruled over the eastern division of the empire, fitted out a great fleet at Constantinople to make another attempt to suppress these pirates. There were more than 1,000 ships in this fleet, and they carried 100,000 men. The commander of the expedition was given to Basilicus, the brother of Emperor Leo's wife. Basilicus sailed with his ships to Africa and landed the army not far from Carthage. Genseric asked for a truce for 5 days to consider terms of peace, and the truce was granted. But the cunning Vandal was not thinking of peace. He only wanted time to carry out a plan he had made to destroy the Roman fleet. One dark night, during the truce, he filled the largest of his ships with some of the bravest of his soldiers, and they sailed silently and cautiously in between the Roman ships, towing behind them large boats filled with material that would easily burn. These boats were set on fire and floated against the Roman vessels, which also were soon on fire. The flames quickly spread, and in a very short time, a great part of the Roman fleet was destroyed. Basilicus fled with as many ships as he could save and returned to Constantinople. This was the last attempt of the Romans to conquer the Vandals. Genseric lived to a good old age, and when he died in 477, all the countries he had conquered during his life still remained parts of the Vandal dominions.
You're listening to Radio Arian at Radio Arian.